I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of a Middle East where hundreds of thousands of Palestinian survivors of 16 months of UK-US-EU armed genocide are on their way home. This is Israel aerially bombards Lebanon. But the so-called US deep state faces chaos, albeit not in the US backyard, where Donald Trump's threats against Colombia succeeded in demonstrating US power outside of Cuba, Nicaragua and Venezuela. In African mineral superpower Congo, the US embassy has been under attack. FBI and Intel boss picks Kash Patel and Lieutenant Colonel Tulsi Gabbard. Confirmation hearings demonstrate the fears of the military-industrial complex as Trump tries to overhaul decades of dirty tricks against the people of the USA and the people all around the world, let alone support for dictator Zelensky's Nazis in Ukraine. And amidst Washington turmoil, the CIA quietly admitted a likelihood that COVID-19, which killed perhaps 20 million, emanated from a Fauci biowarfare lab leased in China. As to freedom of speech in the vassal states of Europe, Switzerland just incarcerated truth-teller Ali Abu Nima, founder of the Electronic Intifada, just days after it rolled out the red carpet for Israeli genocide president Isaac Herzog at Davos. Another truth-teller, Max Blumenthal, editor-in-chief of The Grey Zone, joins me again from Washington, D.C. Max, thanks so much for coming back on. I should start off by saying, is the Grey Zone there now in the White House at the invitation of Caroline Leavitt, Trump's new press secretary? She was very clear. She wanted, presumably, organizations like yourselves right there in the heart of power downstairs from the Oval Office.
Well, I'm hoping to be allowed back into the State Department press room. But I did put in an application. And the application form is about 5 lines long. I imagine thousands of people, including internet randos, put in applications as well. And it will take a long time to process them. The White House press briefing room will likely become even more of a zoo than it was before. I don't know how it's possible to call on them, whether they'll all show up. But the kind of rumor mill has it that the Trump administration is prioritizing those who are pro-Trump voices.
Breitbart and the rest. You mentioned the State Department. People around the world will know, especially across the global south, of you and Sam Husseini at Tony Blinken's last press conference. I suppose Marco Rubio, the new Secretary of State, may use that against you, whether it's a Trump administration or not.
It's unclear. I did hear from Sam that he had some trouble getting back in, but we'll see what happens. I mean, the reason we did that and we interrupted Tony Blinken, or to the extent that it was even an interruption, I call it a humanitarian intervention, was for two reasons. Number one, we had actually been respecting the process as Blinken ordered Sam Husseini to do when he attempted to ask a question. We had been going for 15 months, raising our hands, following the process, and never violating the rules. But for months and months, Matthew Miller, his press secretary, Blinken's press secretary, had blacklisted us and refused to call on us. Number two, the rest of the press refused to confront Blinken in the way that he deserved after completely subverting the process inside the State Department when his own staff was reporting to him that U.S. weapons were being used to shred children in large numbers in the Gaza Strip. He froze them out and led some of them, like Josh Paul, who was in charge of arms control, to actually leave and become whistleblowers. It was also the press enjoyed, as Tony Blinken said in his opening statement when I began to intervene, that he was friends with so many of these reporters and they were hanging out at fancy Jose Andres restaurants together in Washington. This is not a relationship that is ethical with someone who is an architect of what I consider to be the Holocaust of our time. So I thought it was necessary to do, but if I'm allowed back in, I intend to continue to respect the process.
And just to be clear, people can watch the video of you trying to be a journalist in the State Department and the shame full behavior of your colleagues, the other journalists. Actually, speaking of that, away from Gaza, could it be Ukraine that destroys Butcher Blinken's reputation? Because there's an audit of the money that was sent out under the, I don't know whether it was the Biden administration, a lot of controversy here, who was running your country over the past year. Could Blinken actually be got finally, not for genocide, not for the Holocaust in Gaza, but for that?
Well, it's kind of remarkable now to watch USAID suspend many of its grants abroad, and 90% of Ukrainian media has seen its funding dry up. So the US had basically created not just a kind of NATO colony with advanced weapon systems on Russia's border, but also one of the most well-funded propaganda apparatuses on the planet. And now, if you look at Hromadsky, for example, a Ukrainian media outlet that just sprouted up on the eve of the Maidan coup, they're begging for money. They're panhandling on the front page of their websites because their funding has dried up. And this actually includes funding to neo-Nazi-tied activists from C-14, who are complaining, C-14 being a neo-Nazi group in Ukraine that has been sponsored by state interests, is also seeing its funding dry up. So for all the liberals who freaked out over Elon Musk's Sieg Heil, they enthusiastically supported the whole Project Ukraine, including the state-sponsored neo-Nazis, and now they're howling about USAID cutting these organizations off. This seems to me to be a huge scandal that, of course, Western media is sweeping under the rug.
Yeah, and we await that order. But to be clear, you are on a death list of one of those outlets, presumably funded by one of these programs. I know the servers were apparently located in Virginia for this Ukrainian outlet, which has put so many people that have been on this program on death lists, including you.
Well, you're referring to Mirot Voretz, or the so-called peacemaker, which has been sponsored by elements in the Ukrainian Interior Ministry. And they list Langley, Virginia, home of the CIA, on their website. That's sort of to troll people. We do know that this is backed by the Ukrainian state. And I'm not on that website, to be sure, which is actually kind of disturbing because my colleagues, Anya Parampil and Aaron Mate,
oh, that's
are
right. You're not
there.
On it, are you? That's why I always thought you were a Ukrainian spy, clearly. No, it became that. It became a reverse barometer of who the best sources were on Ukraine for journalists and scholars.
Well, they've listed many Americans. It's a massive scandal that we, the American taxpayer, funding this government, which is putting us on death lists. Many watching will know that Daria Dugina, the daughter of Alexander Dugin, the Russian nationalist philosopher, who was herself a foreign policy analyst, was assassinated by Ukrainian forces sent by Ukrainian intelligence and then marked as liquidated on the Mirot Voretz website. I was targeted by a separate Ukrainian government initiative called MOLFAR, which sent out all my personal information, including my address or purported address, the purported addresses of all my family members and their work associates, to thousands of journalists and activists around the world. MOLFAR is based in London and is staffed by former Ukrainian government officials. And recently there was a doxing attempt on me as well, through pro-Ukrainian channels on Telegram. This is just persistent. It's an attempt to intimidate and threaten anyone who's a public figure who questions the imbroglio and scandal of over $175 billion of US aid to Ukraine, which has led to a complete bloodbath in which an entire generation of Ukrainians has been wasted, thrown in vans against their will and sent into a slaughterhouse, as well as many Russians. And now The Economist, which had been touting all of Ukraine's supposed gains on the battlefield, now concedes that the Ukrainian front is collapsing, while Vladimir Zelensky himself, in an interview, a curse-laden interview with the podcast bro Lex Fridman, complained that out of that $175 billion, only half of it actually reached Ukraine, and most of it is going to contractors in the U.S. This is money laundering, and we are being targeted, our families are being targeted here in the U.S. by Ukrainian government interests for criticizing it. So, you know, one thing that, you know, Republican senators or the Trump administration could do is finally cut off this death list.
I mean, to be clear, in fairness to Ali Abu Nima, a brave journalist who, like you, were exposing the October 7th rape hoax, Amnesty International and some other of those sorts of groups, sometimes unkindly referred to as kind of doing the CIA's work for them most of the time. You didn't get any support from Reporters Without Borders or any of these sorts of organizations for the death threats against you, because presumably they're funded by the same channels of funding that occur and that may end under Trump's judicious ending of U.S. aid.
Well, my colleague at the Gray Zone, Jeremy Lofredo, was jailed by Israel for his reporting on Iranian missile strikes on Israel. His reporting covered the same areas that credentialed mainstream reporters had covered, and he was picked up at a West Bank checkpoint. It was obviously political. He was subjected to really harsh conditions, abuse, taunted by soldiers, and accused by Israel of assisting an enemy during wartime, which carries a maximum penalty of life in prison or even death. He was eventually let out. I mean, this is a ridiculous accusation. And we did receive some support from press freedom organizations like the Committee to Protect Journalists, which was refreshing. But at the same time, the Committee to Protect Journalists has refused to recognize scores and scores of Palestinian journalists who were killed in Gaza deliberately by the Israeli military as such, as journalists who were killed for doing their work. So we still expect a lot more from these corporate and state adjacent press freedom organizations, but it was refreshing to see support. I haven't seen any support for Ali Abu Nima, the Electronic Intifada founder, who was bundled into a van by undercover cops who violently arrested him in Zurich as he was about to deliver a talk for the Swiss Palestine Committee. He spent 2 days alone in a windowless cell and before being deported. He committed no crime in the country. And this is part of a trend across the West. We see in London, where Kit Clarenberg, my colleague from the Gray Zone, was hauled off an airplane as he returned to visit his family, a British citizen interrogated for 8 hours about his work with the Gray Zone. Asa Winstanley raided at home, had his devices seized. He's a colleague of Abu Nima at Electronic Intifada. Sarah Wilkinson, a Palestine solidarity activist, raided at home, had her home turned upside down by British counterterror cops, and new laws coming in to suppress speech critical of Israel. This is a trend across the West, and it's what we're witnessing, especially in the so-called Garden of Europe, is liberal democratic values being cast to the wayside and systematically urinated upon by European leadership across the spectrum in order to protect a psychotic little apartheid state called Israel.
Max Blumenthal, I'll stop you there. More from the founder and editor-in-chief of The Gray Zone after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the founder and editor-in-chief of The Gray Zone, Max Blumenthal. Max, you were talking about the catastrophic totalitarian press system in Europe. I should just say that the CIA whistleblower Asif Rahman, who also, like Jeremy Lofredo of Gray Zone, was revealing Israeli plans to attack Iran and is being persecuted right now. This new Trump apparent openness regarding press freedom, Tucker Carlson probably will benefit out of that because he'll get his press credentials pretty easily. What did you make of him saying there was an assassination attempt or plans by the so-called Biden, Blinken, Sullivan, Harris administration to kill Putin, Vladimir Putin?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I do know that the Ukrainian government attempted to kill Vladimir Putin with a drone attack on the Kremlin, which failed. And that is one of their objectives. And it does appear to be, it aligns with the objectives that we've exposed that were outlined in documents by a secret British military intelligence cell overseen by a veteran military intelligence official and MI6 official Chris Donnelly, We've exposed it through a series of investigations at the Gray Zone by Kit Clarenberg, where the Ukrainian military, as it loses ground on the battlefield, is being redirected through into kind of terror operations on Russian soil. Sabotage operations. We publicized for the first time the secret blueprint to blow up the Kerch Bridge, which was attempted by Ukrainian forces through a terror attack. Attacks on pipelines, but also attacks on Russian railways, assassinations of Russian public figures. And we recently saw the assassination of the Russian general who led the information operations on exposing US-funded biolabs in Ukraine, and also in poking holes in the US claims about Syrian chemical attacks. And he was assassinated outside his home by a Ukrainian intelligence asset. So it all seems to be fairly consistent. I have no idea, though. I would have no way of confirming whether high-level figures in the Biden administration actually set out to kill Putin. I also recall Biden's words in Warsaw at his first major speech, trying to rally the world to support Ukraine. And he supposedly went off script and said something to the effect of, "This man cannot be allowed to rule," referring to Vladimir Putin. And the Biden administration walked that back, but it was essentially a call for regime change, and it focused on one man, Vladimir Putin.
Just as he said the Nord Stream pipeline would not be allowed to allow gas to flow to Germany. Do you expect these papers to be declassified under, and I should say Carlson was talking to a friend of the show, Matt Taibbi, when he made that a sudden revelation about the plans to kill Putin. Will we get the details on Nord Stream, do you expect, from a Trump administration that's vowing to open up a lot of information that's kept secret from the U.S. public?
Not before a deal with Ukraine. I highly doubt it. Trump is actually demurred when asked about it, so which it in itself is revealing that Donald Trump refused to comment on who is responsible for NATO when the Biden administration was doing all they could to deny a U.S. hand, including leaking stories to the Washington Post and other mainstream publications about Ukraine's responsibility in a secret operation of which, in which Vladimir Zelensky was kept in the dark. So I don't expect anything new, but I do commend independent investigators like Eric Anderson, the Swedish engineer who led the first independent expedition to the sites of the Nord Stream blast, has sent drones to the pipelines to actually investigate, and has done a whole lot more than the state investigators in Germany and Sweden and elsewhere, who have basically buried the entire investigation. I mean, that's really a red flag right there, that this investigation is, their investigations have been closed with no findings.
And away from the vassal states there, do you also expect declassification of the Fauci biowarfare documents now this CIA admission has come through? Clearly, COVID, a very important part of the Trump psyche. And how shocked were you when you heard the truth finally being coming from Langley, that they were researching biowarfare weapons? What does it say about the Chinese Communist Party allowing Americans to research bioweapons in any case on their soil?
If the CIA's did not issue a conclusion, it's more sort of a
high
likelihood finding under new leadership, which is more hostile to China. But my colleague Sam Husseini, who also intervened in the Blinken final press conference, broke the story that USAID and the Pentagon through DARPA were funding EcoHealth Alliance, which was conducting gain-of-function research, very dangerous gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And that, to me, seems that that's the area where we deserve more declassification, more testimony from figures like Peter Daszak, who were involved, as well as Anthony Fauci. And Fauci having been pardoned preemptively by Joe Biden on his way out actually opens him up to more testimony. The public does deserve answers about this virus, which continues to upend lives, and whose response was mishandled so catastrophically by figures who appear to have been involved in this dangerous gain of function research and who appear to have lied about it. That was the whole reason why Biden had to pardon Anthony Fauci, which was that he misled the public about his role in gain of function research.
Yeah,
if he somehow were responsible, this seems like the crime of the century.
Yeah, and the corrupt Joe Biden pardons, as you imply there, mean that he can't take the fifth in any Senate or congressional investigation into Fauci's role in creating COVID-19.
Right, that's what I meant. It opens him up to much more revealing, potentially revealing questioning.
Now, on Israel, I mean, over here in the UAE, it's like, this is banner headlines, 200,000 return to North Gaza in 2 hours, calls mount against relocation of Gazans. Saudi Arabia putting its foot down, saying absolutely no normalization of any kind unless a Palestinian state. What do you think amidst the 2,000-pound bombs now being allowed in, Trump saying it has nothing to do with Netanyahu after Netanyahu tried to make out it was a friendly gesture from the United States, but simultaneously the first foreign leader to be invited to Washington to meet President Trump is Netanyahu. What's your take?
Well, Donald Trump is despite being a seminal force in securing this ceasefire deal, I don't believe there would have been a ceasefire deal if Kamala had been reelected. Donald Trump is planning to preside over the most pro-Israel or make Israel great again administration in American history, with $100 million in campaign donations from Israeli intelligence asset Miriam Adelson propelling him forward, surrounded by figures who are deeply embedded in the Israeli, the architecture of Greater Israel, from his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to David Friedman, who was his ambassador before. New ambassador is Mike Huckabee, who doesn't even recognize the existence of a West Bank, sees Israel as the future landing pad for the Messiah. Elise Stefanik, U.S. ambassador to the U.N., is a Catholic lady who has basically been purchased by Miriam Adelson to do Israel's bidding. And Donald Trump, in securing this ceasefire from Gaza, has ensured that the regional war that would have upended the first part of his administration, the first year of his administration, of his tenure, did not happen.
We should just say we're having Donald. This interview before any perhaps imminent strike from Israel on Iran.
Well, yeah, I'll get to that. Donald Trump did not want a potential conflict with Iran right away. It was heading there. Yemen was sort of the testing ground for what Israel was planning to do in Iran. And that has stopped thanks to the ceasefire that Trump and his golf buddy, Steve Witkoff, secured. Trump has handed over the West Bank to Israel effectively. Israel's rampaging through the northern West Bank, trying to stamp out all signs of resistance around Jenin, where the Palestinian Authority has lost control. It is working to defund UNRWA in East Jerusalem. The U.S. is fully on board with that, discrediting the U.N. Refugee Works Agency. It is allowing settlers and emboldening settlers to rampage and carry out price tag terror attacks on Palestinian villages by reversing one of the only things the Blinken-Biden administration did to keep Israel on a leash, which was to sanction four violent settler terrorists. Those sanctions are gone, and that sends a message to the rest of the settlers. And the West Bank is much more significant to Israel than Gaza. Gaza is a warehouse for surplus humanity in the demographic trench war that Zionists are waging with the Palestinian people. The West Bank, and particularly the northern West Bank and the southern West Bank, Hebron and Nablus, those two areas are so rich with religious significance for the settler movement, and which really represents the future of Zionism and the future of Israeli leadership, that Israel can't afford to let that go.
Yeah,
it cannot afford to allow
just say,
any finally, Palestinian state to take root.
Yeah, we're coming to an end, but of course the corrupt Palestinian authority then will kind of be neutralized if that actually all happened. Egypt and Jordan, I should say, refusing point blank any of the, despite no doubt threats from Trump to go along with the Trump agenda. But then, so we can say that now successive regimes in your country have helped Hamas, basically, because the Biden-Blinken regime, as we saw when the prisoners were sent back to Israel for the October 7th prisoners, Hamas has never been stronger, an admission from the outgoing Blinken State Department. And if the West Bank goes because Trump has given the go-ahead to destroy it, basically, these are the greatest recruiting sergeants for Palestinian resistance in recent years.
And you have an ailing Netanyahu who may be on his last legs, and the ultimate agenda of Benjamin Netanyahu has been to drag the United States into a direct military confrontation with Iran. So that is certainly in the cards. That's something Netanyahu expects out of Trump. And with Donald Trump, what you're going to get, even more than in his first term, is a lifting of the mask, a lifting of the mask on the transatlantic liberal, so-called liberal democracies, but also on Israeli apartheid. And I expect consider it highly possible that Israel will attempt to annex large sections of the West Bank under Donald Trump, which will lift the mask on apartheid. What will they do with those Palestinians? They, under international law, have to take care of them and to, you know, provide them with postal services and sewage. And of course, they're going to Gazify the West Bank and declare them surplus humanity as well. So Donald Trump is forcing history, you know, into an accelerationist mode where many of these conflicts are going to erupt much more quickly than we expected. And Israel also feels like it's on borrowed time, particularly as it's set, this whole state is centered so much around Netanyahu, who sees that his lifeline is coming to an end. So it wants to reshape the region rapidly and believes that it may only have 4 more years to do so.
Max Blumenthal, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Afshin.
That's it for the show. We'll be back on Monday with a brand new episode of Going Underground. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.